Madame Zach, I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is March 29th, 1995. My sponsor is Tommy C, who knows where I am. Tommy is on this meeting today. And I thank you, Jimmy, and everybody from Men Who Trudge for being here today. I'm a deadhead. When I had hair, it was long. I was a hippie. Here's me at a dead show, sober. And in the 1970s, I used to, before I started drinking, I was getting high every day, except when I had responsibilities. And I did stuff like take LSD while I was lifeguarding. During the blizzard of 77, when it was minus like 70 or something degrees outside, I was at the UB campus waiting for a bus, and I decided to take my gloves off to light a pipe, and my hands were freezing. I couldn't do it. The pedestrians stop and say, "You okay?" Say, "Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine." It when I moved to Chicago, I lost my dealer connections and I switched over to alcohol, and I was I remember when they're 25-cent beers during happy hour. I go to pick up my son from preschool and I stop at the beer place first and get loaded and then go pick him up and try to drive home. I use breath mints to try and not be detected. I'm also a jock, and when I would run, I'd take beer in the shower. I'd finish a run. I'd be sometimes I could hallucinate if I drank beer right on an empty stomach, and or if I pulled an all-nighter for some reason for work or something, and I drink beer, and I remember years later, my sponsor Tommy saying to me, "Zach, when you're hungry, eat food. When you're tired, sleep. And when you're thirsty, drink water." And it's just like, oh my God, what an amazing idea. I remember once drinking beer in the supermarket, being escorted outside out of the store. My son, when he was 5 or 6, saying, "Daddy, you smell like beer." And at some point, I said, "You know, I gotta control my drinking a little bit." And I tried going on the budget plan, where I would I was working at a drugstore, and drugstores sold alcohol here in Chicago. And so I'd buy only little bottles so I wouldn't have as much to drink. Little bottles of whiskey or something. And I just buy more and more little bottles though, because I kept running out. Or I'd buy big bottles so I wouldn't spend as much money. That didn't work. At one point I tried stopping, and couldn't find my sister at a concert, and got really, really frustrated and just said, "F it, I'm gonna get drunk," and or just found myself drinking again. And I in late March of 95, I tried stopping again, and I got drunk, and I said, "I'm gonna call AA," and I got to work and immediately forgot. And so I tried not drinking again the next morning, and I was and I got in a fight with my wife. I was fighting with everybody. Even though I had a job and we had two cars, and I still had a family, I was very alone. I've been sneaking beers at work and hadn't gotten caught yet. And I had this fight with my wife. She didn't bug me about drinking, because she, in part because she was caught up in her own stuff, but also because she had never known me sober, and so she thought that I was like that all the time. But we'd fight about which side of the street that restaurant was on. And I went in the kitchen, and the only thing left in there was a big bottle of sherry. And I hate sherry. And I poured the entire bottle into a big tumbler and belted it. And I said, "This is fucked." When I got downtown, I called AA, and I said, I think I said, I don't know what I said, but the woman on the phone, whose name was Nellie, said to me, "What's your name?" And I said, "I thought you're supposed to be anonymous." And she said, "We're anonymous at the level of press, radio, and films." I said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And she said, "Do you want to quit drinking or not?" So I gave her my name, and then she wanted my address and my phone number. And she was going to send some men over to my house. And so that was later that night. But that afternoon, that lunchtime, I went to a meeting called Nooners in Chicago, and I was shaking. The Everybody was talking to me about stuff, and And I didn't understand what they were talking about. The guy giving the lead was talking about stuff I had never done. And all I wanted to do was quit drinking. And late in the meeting, this guy raises his hand and he says, "Son," and I know you guys heard me say this, but I'm gonna say it again because I try to do this every day. He said, "If you do five things, I fundamentally guarantee you won't drink or take a mood-altering substance for today. When you get up in the morning, get on your knees and ask a higher power to relieve you, or whatever you conceive a higher power to be, relieve you of the compulsion to drink or take a mood-altering substance." It's a good thing he threw in a mood-altering substance because I still had a bunch of LSD in the freezer. Read something from AA, talk to another man in AA, go to an AA meeting, and if you haven't drunk or taken mood-altering substance at the end of the day, get on your knees again and thank a higher power for relieving yourself of the compulsion to drink. And and the other thing I remember from that meeting was that I had always gotten really, really loaded to go to dead shows. And I was very worried that how am I going to go to a dead show? And I mean, my first show was my first time at taking acid, and I blacked out at shows and everything else. And I had a wonderful time at shows, I thought. And I made a beeline for this guy who had a Rolling Stones tattoo on his arm. I figured, and he said to me, I said, "What am I going to do about the dead show?" And he said, "Is the dead show today?" And I said, "No." He said, "Don't worry about it." And I just felt my shoulders relax. And what an idea. So that night I got home and I asked my wife and to take our boy up to the front of the house, and I got all worried, and these two guys came to my house, Howard W. and Tommy C. show up. Tommy, they asked me if I have any booze in the house, and there's some booze that my wife had that she had received for her birthday or something. They didn't tell me to pour it out. Tommy was talking about alcoholism and how it ruined his life, and he's very dark, and I didn't like him. And Howard was all upbeat and sunny about how they made things better. And I liked Howard. And I asked him, I said, "Are people in AA happy?" He said, "Yeah." And I believed him. Tommy said he gave me a big book. He told me he was going to be my sponsor. And he'll deny he said this, but I said, "I'm pretty sure the conversation went like this." I said, "What if I don't like you?" And he said, "I love you already." He says that he would never have said that, but and apparently on the way out of my house, Tommy told Howard he didn't think I was going to make it because I put up so many protests. I asked them about drinking fake beer, and they said that it wouldn't, AA wouldn't work. I asked about taking LSD, and they said AA won't work if you do those things. So then I told my wife after they left, and she immediately poured out the bottle of booze that she had, and I said, "No." And then the next morning, I got up for a run. I forgot to pray, but I was in the park, and suddenly I thought of praying, and I got down on the concrete in the park, and I said, "Dear God, please relieve me of the compulsion to drink." And I felt really safe. And I didn't take beer into the shower when I got home. And I went back to Nooner's again, and I called Tommy, and those first few days I didn't know how to introduce myself. I went to Tommy took me to a Sunday morning breakfast meeting here in Skokie, called Agatha's, and and when they were going around introducing themselves, I wanted to feel like I was like everybody else. So I said I was an alcoholic. And later that afternoon, I knew I was going to go to the store for the first time since I started going to AA, and I knew that the cart was going to turn down the beer aisle. And I was going to end up buying beer, and I called Tommy up and I said, I described this, and he said, "What'd you call yourself today?" I said, "I was an alcoholic." He said, "You said you were an alcoholic. I didn't say you were an alcoholic." And then he said words that I still hear in my head all these years later. He said, "Alcoholics can't drink." And it wasn't one of these, "You can't drink." It was this truth. And when I went to the store, I heard Tommy's voice in my head. And other times when I found myself in beer aisles, I hear Tommy's voice. Shortly after this, I got diagnosed with ADHD. I had gone through life not understanding one of most of the reasons why I couldn't sit still, or why I blurted stuff out all the time and was constantly getting in trouble. And I realized that that was part of the reason why I could hallucinate while I drank, because that's one of the things that sometimes when you have ADHD you can do. Anyway, I started taking meds, and that helped with some of the anger as well. And I said to Tommy, I said, "I'm taking meds. That's helping with some of my issues. And he said, Zach, would you have ever gotten to that place of seeing a psychiatrist and getting diagnosed and prescribed if you hadn't been sober? I said, no. He says, that's how the steps help you, man. Tom started me on the steps, and when I did my fifth step with him, he told me God forgave me, and I believed him, and that was wonderful. But I didn't feel complete relief, and even though I came home and I prayed and I tried to see if I had left anything out, and at some point, I discovered what I had left out. We used to take an elevator. Nooners was at, he used to be up on the 20 something floor of a building, and we'd take this long elevator ride before after the meeting, and there was a guy on the elevator who broke my anonymity on the elevator ride after the meeting, and I wanted to get him to shut up, and I took his arm and I squeezed it as hard as I could to get him to shut the hell up. So the equivalent of mom kicking me under the table, which never worked. I mean, you know, I say, why are you kicking me? And I remember calling Tommy on after the elevator ride and telling him just how angry I was that this guy broke my anonymity, and feeling very justified. And Tommy said, Zach, you got rage issues, man. Write it up. You left that out of your four step. Oh. And so I wrote it all up and did a whole separate fourth and fifth step on rage, and that was a huge aha. That guy, years later, I was secretary of a meeting for about 4 years, and had to find people to talk about different steps, and the speaker didn't show up when it was supposed to be the ninth step lead. One person shows up for this meeting, and it's the guy whose arm I put the stranglehold on. And since my speaker didn't show up, I ended up giving the lead on the ninth step. And I thought, Zach, this is a message from God here. You got to make an amend to this guy. And he didn't remember any of it. He said nobody'd ever made an amend to him before. I've never seen him again since. But I do a 10-step inventory daily, and one of the things I see is, was I rageful or frightening, explosive? And I like never check that off anymore. One of the people I asked to give a lead was a woman who gave a lead on the seventh step, and she was a victim of sexual abuse. And she talked about how her character defect was her not being willing to forgive. And it was really, really powerful for me because with my folks, I had felt like I was the victim all the time. And I couldn't figure out what I had to do to make amends to them. Yeah, I took money from my dad and I replenished his tobacco can where he kept all his money. But when I think I was, but when Dad died, I went up to him in the funeral home, and I felt this tremendous feeling of forgiveness. I mean, I knew he loved me, and I knew that he had tried his best to be a great dad. But all those times he called me dumb and criticized me, and I needed to forgive him. And he was entitled to that, and I called up Tommy afterwards, and he checked with Howard. Turned out Howard, the guy who 12-stepped me, he was Tommy's sponsor. To and I said, "Yeah, you just made amends to your dad," and I eventually, I'm on 10, 11, and 12. I do the 10 step every day, and I want to see if I can share it. This is every day I fill in a column, and it starts with all the positive stuff. I pick these categories up from the 12 and 12 and from the big book, and if I haven't done anything good that day, then I ask, did I have good thoughts or good intentions? And then there's all this different stuff here about self-restraint and listening. I know you can't read it all, but the listening is one of those things that I really work on a lot, because my brain is going a million miles a second, even with the ADHD meds, and paying attention to what somebody else says is not that easy for me. And what I got down here is empathize that others have needs, even if they don't understand my needs now. And so it's a pretty high bar, but if I check that off, if I write down how I listened that day, that's a real plus for me. And then with give with no thought of return, I check that off if I I these five men have asked me to sponsor them, and if I talk with one of them that day, I meet with them individually, and then we all meet together at 8 o'clock on Saturday night in a Zoom meeting. So I mark off if one of those has happened, and patient with myself while I struggle with the problem, self-care. If I do something for myself, like if I run that day or if I do my physical therapy, I check that off. And then there's all the stuff that I may need to make amends for down here. Was I selfish, blaming? The biggie, and there's a, in, do I feel stupid, ashamed, fearful, frightened? Fear critics, fear having my abilities or intelligence diminished. I'm incompetent. Do I have a, am I overwhelmed by enormity of one perfect solution? That's the self-centered fear, obviously, that the there's the un, underneath a lot of my character defects, but I and I write about it. I do some meditation about feeling grateful, and talk to my sponsor. I'll talk to other men about it, and then down here, was I resentful, angry, prideful, playing the big shot, driven to save face? I explosions, those almost never get checked off anymore. I mean, I looked back before today, and I think I checked off resentful and angry, I think 5 or 6 times since October, which is as far back as the current packet goes. And I think that's in part because after I do this, I get on my knees and I don't know how to stop the share here. And I stay down there for about 10 minutes. I do the third step prayer. I put please in front of please take away my difficulties. And I say the seven step prayer, and then the 11 step prayer. I have it memorized, but I frequently forget to say when I have just when there's despair, let me bring hope. And then I remember that at the end, and I think, oh, right. Despair and hope. That's my fear kicking in. And so I add that. And by the time I'm done on my knees, I feel safe and ready. I do list my character defects at the end, and the prayers, and ask God to, when I'm fearful, to help me know that I'm loved. But He loves me, my sponsor loves me, my family loves me, I love me, my parents love me. When I'm when I'm impulsive today, I ask God to relieve me of my impulsivity and help me to understand how my impulsivity hurts others, hurts myself. And I heard this once in a meeting when I feel attacked, I ask God to remind me to help me to remember to say, please be patient with me while I struggle with this. And I've only remembered to say that once in all the times I've ever felt attacked by somebody. And the person got completely disarmed when I said it. And it completely changed the conversation. I didn't do it to get off the hot seat. I just said it because I thought to say it. And so I hope I remember to say it again sometime. My sponsor, and I'll wrap up soon. My sponsor told me, suggested I go to home group, and I didn't. I went, and everybody was smoking, and I got real judgmental also because everybody was overweight, it looked like, and I was a jock, and he said, Zach, someday you're gonna want to go and retreat with these people. I thought, oh God. And I couldn't wait for anniversary night because the anniversary night usually was a shorter night and I could get the hell out of there. Well, when my wife miscarried on and it was on a Thursday on home group night, and I went to the meeting. And I asked the secretary for whatever step was the acceptance step. And he said that there's been a call for step three. And when we read step three that night in the 12 and 12, every word just rang true. And I could just feel it. I could feel how God's got everything covered. And that night when we all got together to hold hands at the end, Linda came up to me, and Linda, longtime member, came up to me and she talked about how she helped women who had to go through the DNC and and I just felt such connection. And any of my home group is not perfect. They screw up in a lot of different ways, big time. They violate some of the traditions, but I still love them. And I do go on retreats now with them, and I can't wait to go on retreats with them. My t-shirt here, I got from a member. The magic word is on the back. I don't know if you can see it. It's okay. And I feel okay right now. And if none of you have gone out and gotten drunk, Tommy says it was an okay lead. I'll keep coming back. Thanks a lot.